the title of this conference, Formation of a Christian Conscience in Today's World. What do we mean by a Christian conscience? It is the ability to determine right from wrong according to the teachings of Jesus Christ. And what is the difference between the formation of a Christian conscience at the present time as compared with other times in the past? I think that we have reached a point in the development of the human race where we need to leave behind our childhood and adolescent faith and adopt a more adult, mature level of faith. There are still many Christians today who are living at the childhood level of faith, which is called second level. Also, there are many Christians today at the adolescent or third level of faith. However, we find more and more Christians in recent years moving toward the fourth level of faith, which is that faith appropriate for mature adults. The manner in which a Christian conscience is formed for those at fourth level is considerably different from the formation of conscience of those at second or third level. For those still living at the level of childhood faith, formation of conscience is quite simple. Just do what you're told by your superiors. Try to find a trustworthy guide and do whatever that guide tells us. People at this level do not feel capable of making any decisions themselves, but want to consult those whom they have accepted as their leaders. This, of course, was the level of faith of the vast majority of the German people during the Nazi era. Do what you're told and ask no question. This is the level of faith that most of those who belong to the military are expected to follow. It is also the level of faith that Christians and Catholics had been expected to follow for many centuries before Vatican II, and is still the preferred level of faith of perhaps as much as half or more of the practicing Catholics of our time. For those at the third level of faith, that of adolescent faith, formation of conscience is not quite as simple as second level, but still comparatively easy. Those at third level are expected always to vote with the majority, to follow what one's peers think, go along with the way the neighbors act, keep up with the Joneses, adopt the same conscience which most of the people in today's society accept. People at this third level of faith still do not feel capable of standing alone and making decisions of conscience by their own efforts. Very often, they have rebelled against blind obedience to parents or other superiors, but now they make themselves obedient to peer pressure and go along with the majority opinion. There are many Christians and Catholics, 50 or 60 years of age, who still live and act and make their decisions of conscience at this third level, just as there are many Christians who insist on living at second level. Many religious leaders in today's world live and act at the third level of faith, making decisions of conscience that are strictly in accord with the party line. In other words, what most of their fellow religious leaders also hold. In the religious field, this can easily result in a stubborn adherence to the status quo, the way it has always been done. Such adolescent faith is indicative of a deep inner insecurity on the part of people at this level, and their inability to stand on their own feet or think for themselves. They simply do not feel capable of thinking through questions of conscience, trusting their own knowledge and insight. So they rely on the decisions, the opinions, and the convictions of past generations. The status quo becomes the only trustworthy guide of conscience for persons at this third level of faith. And if their insecurity is authentic and there's no way of overcoming it, they are certainly justified in staying at this third level. The problem of formation of conscience becomes much more critical for those who choose to live at the fourth level of mature adult faith. In my opinion, this is the level of faith that is most appropriate to our times, the level of faith to which more and more people are being called to follow at this moment in history. We can no longer depend on blind obedience to our superiors, no longer merely willing to go along with the majority of our peers as do adolescents, no longer able merely to go along with the decisions that were made in the past. Rather, today we are being challenged to think for ourselves, to take risks, make our own independent decisions in many areas of conscience. This, of course, means the willingness to make mistakes, provided we have the humility to acknowledge our mistakes and the willingness to correct them when brought to our attention. Persons at the fourth level of faith must have the courage to stand alone even when all or most of their fellow citizens disagree with them. We see this, of course, in the case of Jesus Christ and many of the great saints down through the centuries. A deep inner security as well as a great trust in God's help are required in order to carry out the work of formation of conscience at this mature adult level of faith. It can easily be seen that formation of conscience at this level is quite dangerous. A person needs to be quite mature, balanced, unselfish, wise, and experienced in order to make trustworthy decisions of conscience based on one's own insights and divorced from the opinions of others. Actually, it is only the rare individual who has reached a sufficiently high degree of maturity and wholeness who is capable of standing alone in making decisions of conscience as to what is right and what is wrong. We look around us and we see the disasters that result when young people and even adults reject all authority, all past tradition and teachings, and choose to follow their own judgment of what to do. Take the whole breakdown of sexual morality in our times with its total permissiveness in the area of sexual pleasure. Take the millions of women who have abortions each year, the thousands of well-educated doctors who perform those abortions, following their own conscience, it would seem, and justifying the murder of these millions of innocent human beings that are unborn. We are appalled when we think of the murder of the 6 million Jews by the Nazis during World War II. Yet many more millions of innocent human beings are murdered each year by abortion in what we consider to be civilized countries by well-educated and apparently mature persons. Or again, look at the excesses of drugs and alcohol that result from young people and adults following their own conscience and doing what seems right to them. It is no wonder that seeing all of these abuses of freedom of conscience, that many, many good people today reject the freedom of conscience demanded by persons at this fourth adult level of faith and insist upon a return to the older methods of blind obedience to the traditions and the teachings of the morality of the past. It is readily understandable why so many people today shy away from accepting the personal responsibility for making their own decisions of conscience, and therefore insist on remaining at second or third level of faith. People who are not well educated in religious matters are indeed justified in refusing to move on to this fourth level, provided there is no opportunity for them to attain the adult religious education and the psychological maturity and the balance needed to live and make decisions at the fourth level of adult faith. On the other hand, in view of the fact that so many of our fellow Christians have moved to this fourth level, every Christian is challenged today to take full advantage of every opportunity to attain the needed religious education and psychological maturity to enable them to make the most of their decisions of conscience. This is the challenge that faces every adult Christian in our time. There are, of course, necessary conditions that must be fulfilled to justify a person moving and acting according to this fourth level of faith. Only a person who has reached a high degree of self-discipline, of balance, of unselfish love and consideration for others, is capable of making trustworthy decisions of conscience regarding what is right and what is wrong. The problem today is that we have no clear or exact way of testing or determining when a person has reached the level of maturity needed for free and independent formation of conscience. How then is one to know whether and when one has reached the fourth level of faith? There is no absolutely certain way of knowing this. But the closest we can arrive at certainty is by means of the decision and the approval of a peer group of mature adults, and then secondly by the approval of a wise, experienced, mature spiritual director. It seems to me that these two tests are necessary if we are to accept as trustworthy our own decisions of conscience. We simply cannot trust ourselves in this matter when we stand purely alone. Then almost everyone, including even the most hardened criminal and the wildest teenager, is usually convinced that he or she is doing what is right as far as they are concerned, and that they can trust their own decisions regarding what to do or not to do. A person at the fourth level of adult faith is required to do all in one's power to develop one's human faculties, especially the two highest faculties of mind and will. We might speak of these as the head and the heart. These are the two human faculties where we experience the most freedom, and therefore are able to decide for ourselves in what direction we should go with them. Both the success and failure of our life here on earth, as well as our life after death, depend primarily how well we have educated and developed our power to think and our power to love. The two questions which God our judge will ask each of us at the moment of death are as follows. What have you done to grow in wisdom, to develop your mind and intellect in a mature way? And secondly, what good have you done with your life on earth? How have you developed your will to be able to practice unselfish love to the fullest extent of your ability? The more wisdom we have attained with our minds and the more mature and perfect we are in loving, the better we will be in making the right decisions of conscience. Another very, very powerful way of helping us to form a Christian conscience is to study the Beatitudes and the whole Sermon on the Mount as found in chapters 5, 6, and 7 of St. Matthew's Gospel, and try to see how we can apply those teachings of Jesus Christ to the situation in which we find ourselves today. However, this requires both a good knowledge of biblical interpretation as well as a good knowledge of the world in which we presently live. A wonderful book to be recommended to help us properly interpret the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes is a book written by Fritz Kunkel many years ago entitled Creation Continues. It is a psychological study and interpretation of St. Matthew's Gospel. And Fritz Kunkel is especially good in his interpretation of chapters 5, 6, and 7 of the Gospel according to Matthew. In addition to the above suggestions, I would like to make 14 other recommendations of what a person needs to do and to practice in order to feel reasonably secure in following one's own decisions of conscience in regards to what is right and wrong. And I think all 14 of these, along with the previous ones, need to be carried out if we are to live at this fourth level of faith. First of all, we need to have an intense desire and a willingness to put forth whatever effort is necessary to become a saint, to become holy, whole, and mature. As Leon Bloy says, there is only one tragedy, and that is not to be a saint. And sanctity begins with the desire, with the decision to make whatever effort is necessary to attain this. Secondly, the practice of the three commandments of love. Love of God, love of others, and a proper love of self. This includes love of our enemies, both personal and national. And by love, it means, first of all, the desire to see that every other person, God as well as other people, reach the fullness of their capabilities, that they reach happiness, the goal and destiny for which they were created. And secondly, it means the willingness on our part to do everything in our power to help others attain their goal. And so, without an intense effort to practice all three of these commandments of love, we can never trust our own decisions of conscience. Thirdly, a faith commitment to God and to the doing of God's will, similar to the commitment that Mary made at the Annunciation, when she said, "Behold, the handmaid of the Lord, be it done to me according to your word." This faith commitment means a total gift of ourself, a total dedication of our life to the carrying out of God's will, to the fulfillment of the particular destiny to which God has called us when he created us. Fourthly, a conversion of all negativity in our life to a very positive attitude toward God, toward self, toward others, toward the world, and toward the future. This means the elimination of all negative thoughts, desires, words, and actions. Such a positive attitude is only possible if we have a deep trust in God, a conviction of God's wisdom, God's love, God's power, God's goodness, and God's faithfulness to his promises. Fifthly, if we are to trust our own conscience, we need, it seems to me, approximately a whole hour of prayer each day. We need to set aside prime time each day in which we try to enter into dialogue with God, try to listen to what God has to say to us, and then in turn respond to him. I am convinced that if a person sincerely tries to set aside an hour of prayer a day, that most of the time a person can be reasonably sure that whatever insights that they have, that those insights are coming from God. Along with this, as number six, an openness to the inspirations of the Holy Spirit through the cultivation of one's intuitive function during prayer, of trying to be open to any new insights, any changes that seem to be asked of us by God. Number seven would be regular monthly meetings with a mature, wise, experienced, balanced spiritual director. Someone with whom we are completely open. Someone who is trustworthy. Someone who can be objective. Someone who is willing and able to confront us and to challenge us. And to meet with such a person regularly, once a month, let's say for an hour, is another very important safeguard that will help us to make trustworthy decisions of conscience. And along with this, as number eight, to belong to a support group of mature, balanced peers with whom one, again, has reached a level of trustworthiness that one is willing to share one's most intimate thoughts and desires, and that one does not make any major decisions in life without the approval of such a peer group, at least without a long discussion with that group. Number nine, one day of fasting each week as a minimum, plus a good regime of self-discipline to strengthen one's will and to be freed from addictions. All of us have our attachments, our little Isaacs, which we must be willing to sacrifice. And through fasting, through self-discipline, we and the help of God, we are able to bring under control those addictions. Number 10, a constant daily effort to develop the four steps of individuation as they have been explained by Carl Jung. Those four steps are authenticity, significance, transparency, and solidarity. Authenticity means to be able to have a degree of self-knowledge so that one is able to be totally honest with oneself, is able to recognize one's sinfulness, one's negative shadow as well as positive shadow, and that one is able to see where one is able to do good and also where one can easily do evil. Authenticity. Significance means to have a good relationship with God so that one is able to recognize one's place in God's overall plan of creation, to realize that each of us is significant in God's eyes. Each of us is important. Each of us has something worthwhile to contribute. Thirdly, transparency, to be open to love of other individuals, both of the same sex and the opposite sex. To be willing to go out in love over and over again to others. And finally, solidarity, a sense of oneness with other human beings, a realization that we're all together in the same boat of creatureliness, of dependence upon God and upon one another. The 11th recommendation is the practice of peace and reconciliation at all levels. Peace with oneself, peace with one's family, peace with one's community, at peace with people of different races, different nations, peace with God most of all. Number 12, I would place frequent Eucharist and the sacrament of penance, of making use of these Christian sacraments that the Church has made available to us to help us on this road to maturity. For number 13 would be the constant endeavor to practice balance in our life, to maintain the needed tension between the opposite poles of reality, in order that we might continue to go forward in a creative way and not to fall into fanaticism or extremism. And finally, a knowledge of the four Gospels, to become thoroughly familiar with the way Jesus Christ handled various situations in his life, and thus we will be able to know and decide how we should act when we face a similar situation today. It would seem that the human race has indeed arrived at the point of insisting upon its freedom to form its own conscience. In other words, it seems that the time has come for the human race to move from the second or third level of faith to the fourth level. By hook or by crook, it would seem that most people today are going to insist on making their own decisions, whether we like it or not. So rather than showing a negative attitude in condemnation toward this movement to the fourth level of adult faith, we need to do all we can to help people have the necessary tools and safeguards in order the better to ensure that their decisions of conscience will be the correct ones. This is the end of the conference.